Blog Talk Radio.
What's going on, Sports City, man? I'm feeling some type of way, man. My skin's still crawling because of what went down yesterday. Let me stop, man, because I've been getting a lot of good feedback from a lot of people that I know check us out from the wrap-up yesterday. But it's all said and done. That show is passed. We got the grill all set, man. We're sitting outside of the kitchen today enjoying this good weather, at least up here in the New England tri-state area. It's a good little 70 degrees, so I hope y'all are all ready to get this thing kicked off. The NFL schedule's popped off. We got a lot of stuff that I was trying to dish out yesterday that is on slate today for the cookout. I done took off this blazer, loosened up the tie, stepped aside, the kitchen timeless is alive.
What about I be caught in this life? Let's celebrate with a toast and get lost in tonight and make it all light up. Wait until the sun goes down, we gon' make this bitch light up. But when the sun goes down, I'ma make it go.
Ow, hoes turning heads like owls. I'm the man of the ow. Triple entendre, don't even ask me how. Con Edison flowing, connected to a high power. Y'all can miss me with the money talk. The smart money's on hold, fuck what the dummies talk. I don't do too much blogging. I just run the town, I don't do too much jogging. The summer's off, the winter too.
Okay, okay, okay. The caller number is 917-889-9592. You got the next 90 minutes locked and loaded with Sports City. Y'all could have been anywhere else in the world, but you're here with the chefs. And like I said, it's the cookout. So anybody that calls in has an opinion, anything that they want to toss out as a good topic for us to throw around the kitchen, let's do it, man. I already gave y'all the caller number. The chat room is wide open, sportscitychefs.com, that is the website. Continue to show us love. However you're checking us out, whether on iTunes, downloading the show, the numbers have been tremendous. Keep doing what y'all doing. I'm speaking on behalf of everybody here at Sports City. Let me get these guys into this kitchen as best as we possibly can so we can get this cookout started as best as possible. Calling in by way of the state of South Carolina, the Brooklyn Knight himself. You guys know him as Mr. Knight, a.k.a. Chandler. Better known as Nostradamus. Welcome to the cookout. How are you feeling this evening?
I'm fine, man. What's going on?
Doing all right. Look. See, Sportsman, here's what I'm talking about. This is exactly what I'm talking about. Y'all heard how fired up the dude was yesterday. Oh, you know what? I just got to give this dude a cup of coffee. He will be awake shortly. But we'll get into this as best as possible. Last but not least, calling out of the state of Arizona, the Green Bay guy himself. You guys know him as Nacho, a.k.a. Mr. Silver. Welcome to the cookout. How are you feeling this evening?
I'm doing great. Week 2 redemption.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. Like I said, the NFL schedule has been released. We got a lot of stuff that I didn't get to cover yesterday. I hope I get to cover today without any interruptions today. But it's okay. It is the cookout, so by way of anybody calling in, they got any topic to throw around the kitchen, we got y'all. We got y'all most definitely. Now, I don't know if you guys have anything on slate. I got a ton of stuff for today as well as from yesterday, too, that I want to get out. Is there any topic that may have raised an eyebrow that you guys would like to get out before I get rattling off here at the cookout? I'll start with you first, Nacho.
There's no topic. I did segue something at the end of yesterday's show. I can wait till you rattle off what you need to rattle off or however you want to do it, but I'm sticking by NFC East champions.
Help me out. What you rattled off at the end of the show, we'll start there, and then I'll follow you up and get Chandler to throw one in as well.
Okay, short and simple. If Tim Tebow is a starting quarterback all 16 games next year, the Philadelphia Eagles win the NFC East. There's no question about it. There's no arguing. It's plain and simple. They need someone that can run an offense like Chip Kelly's, and they need a winner. Oh, 1-1. There's two. That's Tim Tebow. You're going to win games. You're not going to win them pretty, and you're going to make the playoffs. I'm not going to say you're going to win a Super Bowl or win the playoff games, but Tim Tebow's enough to beat everyone in that division.
Now, I was with you yesterday on a situation about Tebow joining this team and then winning the division. I don't think he'll start the 16 games. I think he'll be an impact player offensively. Like I said, if he comes on the field, all of these defenses better guess that he's running the ball or they're going to run some sort of option. So you know, keep some of these guys in the box. And he may have some shock therapy to, you know, throwing the ball and catching some of these teams off guard. And he may have something that he picked up in the offseason. Who knows? But I don't know if he's going to be the starter. We'll see about that. I want to see how Chandler feels about this. I think Coach Kelly does have an interesting offense that he's going to be able to run. I still think they need a receiver or two because right now Riley Cooper is their number one option at the receiver position. So they're definitely going to need help out there at the end of the day at the receiver position to get some of these defenses to stay honest. But I don't think he wins the starter job. This would be interesting. To me, they already had Sanchez starting over him in New York. Hold on. They already had Sanchez starting over him in New York. Sanchez is there, and I don't even think Sanchez will be the starter. I think this is Bradford's job, especially with Bradford being a notable quarterback with DeMarco Murray while they were in college, if he can stay healthy. Yes, Nacho.
I don't believe, and this is all pure speculation and conjecture. This is my opinion now. We're going strictly on opinion. I believe he's going to use Sam Bradford and he's going to use Mark Sanchez as trading tools, not in the first round and maybe not even in the second round. But you got guys that you are obviously willing to pay for them. People need quarterbacks, obviously not first or second rounders. There goes some receivers off the board right there for you. I do believe he brought Tim Tebow in to be the starter, to be the quarterback. I don't think he's going to run with the injury-ridden Sam Bradford. I think that was a ploy. All the stuff he did prior was to get Marcus Mariota. I think he knows now there's no shot in hell he's going to get it. Cleveland or someone else is going to get that guy and just pay their entire future for. Chip Kelly's not able to do that. I think he felt by getting Bradford, he can get enough picks to stack up and trade up to get Mariota. Now he knows he can't. All that conjecture and gesturing, posturing, saying that Sam Bradford, he got offered a first-round pick. I think it was all just to see, engage how much he can get. I think he feels – I believe he feels he can turn any quarterback into a winner. So I don't believe that, you know, Tebow's skill is in question just because I think Chip Kelly's so arrogant that he believes any quarterback in his system is going to do well. He just needs a winner, a guy who's on the field that's going to be the winner, I guess. It's just all you can say about the guy. So I that's what I believe. As soon as I read it, that's the instantaneous thought that went through my mind. He's using Sam Bradford. He's using Mark Sanchez as trading tools later in the rounds to pick up some players to stack up this team and so they can do what they need to do. That's what I really feel. I don't think he's going to be used as a, you know, one or two times a game, a series or anything like that. I think he'll be the quarterback. He spent the last 2 years honing his skill, and I think Chip Kelly is going to give him that opportunity to do it.
Okay, Chandler, what your thoughts on this situation? Being that you are the guy that had to deal with at least two of the three quarterbacks on your beloved team of gangrene just a while ago, too. So your thoughts on what's being thrown out right now here at the cookout on Tebow potentially starting, if he's healthy, all 16 games for the Eagles?
If Chip Kelly starts Tim Tebow for 16 games, Chip Kelly's going to be coaching at college when this season is over. I mean, he's going to be coaching in college. You can't run that system. He couldn't run the system properly with the good players he had because his defense was on the field for almost 90 plays a game. You're not going to win when your defense is on the field for 80 and 90 plays a game. You traded away LeSean McCoy for a linebacker coming off a leg injury, and you're going to play him 90 plays a game. And it takes a year to get your legs back under you when you're coming off that injury. So that guy's going to get hurt again. Your linebacking core stinks. You brought in two running backs who each of them have only played one full season. Okay? You paid one whose only full season came in a contract year. So you know he's not playing a full season. The other one just can't stay healthy. So when you bring in Tebow, you're going to have 10 in the box because he can't throw the ball down the field. You have Riley Cooper, who's not a number one receiver. And you could say this is a deep draft for wide receivers, but there are no wide receivers that are going to come in and be Kelvin Benjamin. was great last season. He dropped a lot of balls, ran a lot of bad routes. He was a rookie wide receiver, okay, and he did really well. So even if you get a Kelvin Benjamin, you are not going to succeed in the passing game because Kelvin Benjamin put a lot of balls on the ground as far as dropping them simply because he's learning to play wide receiver in this league, learning how to handle the physicality of the season, learning how to train, learning the offense, a pro offense. So let me get this straight. You have your running backs are going to be injured. Ryan Matthews is going to be injured by game three. DeMarco Murray by game four. So you have Darren Sproles, who's not an every down back. I know everybody wants him to be. He's not. You have Tim Tebow, who can't throw the ball down the field, running a read option when you have 10 in the box. I don't care how well you run that read option. With 10 in the box at the NFL level, it's not going to be successful when there is no threat of the quarterback throwing the ball. No threat. You're going to have a defense that's gassed by the eighth game of the season because it was around game 8-9 last season when we started to see the Eagles tail off. It was around game 8-9, okay? Chip Kelly thinks he's intelligent. He wants to be the smartest guy in the room. He's not. He's really not. And he's playing with house money so he can try all these outlandish things because he's going to go back to college and make almost the same amount of money as he's making now. But in the meantime, the Philadelphia Eagles aren't going to win. And not for nothing, I don't care who he starts at quarterback. The Eagles aren't winning that division. It doesn't matter who he starts at quarterback. You got no wide receivers. You got two running backs who can't stay healthy. And your defense stinks. So whether it's Tim Tebow or anybody else, yes, Tim Tebow's a winner. But the fact remains that there's a couple of things he can't do. He just can't do at the NFL level. And one of them is throw the ball down the field. You have to be able to throw the ball down the field. Everybody talks about how the Ravens won in spite of Trent Dilfer. But you know what Trent Dilfer could do every once in a while, just to keep it honest? He could throw the ball down the field. He could throw it down the field. You understand what I'm saying? The Tampa Bay Buccaneers won without, what was it, Johnson? Who's the quarterback of Tampa Bay when they won?
Brad Johnson.
Okay. He could throw the ball down the field. He wasn't, and tell me he was a good quarterback. He really wasn't, but he could throw the ball down the field. They played defense and ran the ball, and all they asked him to do was keep the defense honest. Tim Tebow cannot keep the defense honest. If you can't throw the ball down the field, you can't win. You know how I know that? Because I've watched it for the past six years with my team. I've watched us run the ball extremely well. I've watched us play defense extremely well, but I've also watched us not be able to throw the ball down the field, and we haven't won anything. Yes, we got the two AFC championship games. Did we win them? Why didn't we win them? Because we couldn't throw the ball down the field when we absolutely had to. Okay, and winning, by the way, means getting to the Super Bowl. That doesn't mean making the playoffs. Not for the Philadelphia Eagles. Winning for the Philadelphia Eagles means getting to the Super Bowl. That's it. There is no, oh, we won a division. That's not good enough. Because you forget who the quarterback was previous to this. It was Donovan McNabb. And it wasn't good enough for him to get them to four NFC championship games and one Super Bowl. The Philadelphia Eagles have to get to the Super Bowl and win or play a really good game. That's the barometer. That's it. So if Tebow's not going to do that for you, then it is a dumb move.
Okay, now is there anything that you'd like to respond with? Or?
You know, it's eloquently put, but I just don't think I mentioned them winning a Super Bowl. So I understand I get it. Philadelphia needs a Super Bowl more than anything else, but you got to make the playoffs first. And I really do think, I just think that, you know, this guy had 2 years off. He was able to hone his skill, and he's able to come back and prove everyone that he can do it. I just think this guy's will and his perseverance, and I do believe, you know, it can be taught. He's not without talent. He's not void of talent. I do believe he has it. I just believe he needed the proper training and the proper time. It's really, I guess, the other question and the sidebar would be, how come Tebow gets another shot when many other quarterbacks didn't? But I think that this is going to be a new block where we see quarterbacks that aren't ready first year, second year, leave the league for a couple years, hone their skill, and somebody's going to give him a chance. And I think Tebow's going to be the stepping stone because I do believe now he can throw the ball down the field. Now, I mean, we haven't seen him do it, obviously. It's just pure speculation that he can. But I believe with what we saw him do with the very, very little throwing ability down the field before, just the will to win, like I said, that perseverance, that whatever Tebow has in him, I think he put that all in the soul in trying to throw the ball down the field. And I do believe he's learned it. I don't think he's going to be the best down the field thrower in the NFL, and I don't think he's going to be a top 10 quarterback. But I do believe that he's a better quarterback than he was before. And when you get 2 years, like I said, he's got 2 years to just practice his skill. That's all he's been doing is learning that. And then the ESPN BS on the side for the past 6 months. But it's been him trying to become a quarterback in the NFL for the better part of 2 years. I just think we got to see him on the field before we say he can't do anything yet.
How many years has Robert Griffin been in the league?
He's been in the league 3 years, I believe.
Okay. How many years Colin Kaepernick been in the league?
4 years.
How many years E.J. Manuel, Geno Smith? I can go on and on. And what do we keep saying about them? That they can't pass. That they can't get the ball down the field.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Colin Kaepernick has a gun. We all know that.
He does.
But when mm-hmm. he has to make that pass, can't do it. Not unless you got him on the run. But when he has to drop back in an obvious passing situation and make a throw, doesn't happen. Robert Griffin III, great in that read option offense, right? World beater. But when he had to drop back, just a three-step drop, boom, five-step drop, boom, we're still saying he can't do it. Tim Tebow, yeah, he's had 2 years to practice. These guys have had 3 and 4 years in the league practicing. And I would venture to say that Colin Kaepernick has far more talent than Tim Tebow. I'm sorry. He has far more talent.
A better arm. He's definitely faster. He's faster than Tebow, yes.
I would say Robert Griffin III, it might be smaller, but he has as much talent as Tim Tebow, as much physical talent as Tim Tebow. And he was considered a winner. You understand what I'm saying? So I get what you're saying, but I come back to the same thing, is that these guys, because the NFL does not like that offense, and as much as Chip Kelly may want to run it, you can't. At some point, you have to be able to run a conventional offense. And Tim Tebow can't run a conventional offense. Can't. And he's proven that. He's proven that unless you basically use only the read option, that's the only way he can be successful. Well, if that's the case, the Philadelphia Eagles aren't built to run that offense. That offensive line is not built for it. You got two running backs who aren't built for it. Ryan Matthews, please, can't stay healthy and certainly isn't a burner. You want a couple of guys that can hit the hole real quick and go. DeMarco Murray's not a one-step-and-go back. Neither is Ryan Matthews. Darren Sproles used to be. He's not anymore. So now you're relying strictly on the quarterback. And you have no wide receivers who can get open in space. You have no wide receivers who can get separation.
They do. They do have a receiver that I slept on. They have Jordan Matthews, the youngster that they picked up.
He is
a good receiver out of Vanderbilt. They also... I don't know if this guy can stay healthy, but they also have Miles Austin on their roster, too.
Miles Austin's been done for 2 years. Go ahead, Nacho.
Chandler, you're talking about these running backs like they're all on separate teams and they're running solo. These guys are on one team and they're sharing the ball. There's only one ball. They're not going to hand out three balls at once and say, go run for a hole. They're going to take turns. That helps an injured – a person that gets injured a lot, you take the ball away from them so they don't get injured as much, and you use them not as little as possible, but you spread the ball to these three running backs.
They did that in San Diego with Ryan Matthews. He still kept getting hurt. The only season – oh, and by the way, they were doing that in Dallas with DeMarco Murray. DeMarco Murray wasn't the workhorse back by the bye. He wasn't the workhorse back, and he couldn't stay on the field. He wasn't the workhorse back until last year. when it was a contract year. She was DeMarco Murray. My problem with him is the contract year thing. Had he done any of that in a year previous to a contract year, I would buy him because we all know he has the talent. DeMarco Murray only felt it necessary to play through injuries because he was looking for a payday. I have a problem with that because that tells me about the player. That tells me, you know what, that when push comes to shove, if he's a little dinged up, he's like, man, I got my money. I'm good, man. I can't go. My hamstring is still a little tight. My hamstring is still a little tight. Yeah, you want to talk to me about a guy, Darren Sproles? Darren Sproles will play with two broken legs in my box. And we've seen him do it. We've seen Darren Sproles go out there on one leg and shred defenses. I'm just looking at this team. And to bring in Tebow to that is, once again, he's in a situation where it's a lose-lose for him. He can't be successful because the team is not built to be successful. Then he's going to be asked to do things that he still can't quite do yet, and he hasn't been on the field in 2 years. So it's lose-lose for him. I would love for him to be successful. It's not because I don't like Tim Tebow, although I do have a problem with the fact that he keeps getting opportunities and other quarterbacks with a darker complexion don't get those same opportunities, but that's a conversation for another day.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
That's a conversation for today. That's a conversation for today. It's a cookout. Anything goes today.
I can't see the Eagles being successful with him as a starting quarterback because I don't think the team is built to be successful. Now, if you told me that, say, what's the team? Say the Niners with Harbaugh, right? Before Harbaugh and everybody left the building, right? if he had taken the Tebow, I would say, you know what, hell yeah. Or, you know what? Look at the team in Buffalo right now. Man, you put Tim Tebow on a team like that, absolutely. In Philly, I can't see it.
Mm. I think we're going to have to agree or disagree, Chandler. I can see it. I really do. And I'm more optimistic on the Tebow than I think anyone else except for that guy on ESPN that started everything. But I'm very optimistic on him now. I mean, I wasn't back then. I obviously didn't like the way he was winning games, but he was winning them. So I'm more optimistic towards this in particular player than I could say anything else. And I think that's what I'm giving more to than anything else. And I do believe this guy's will to win is above and beyond, I think, any other player in this league. And I can't bet against Tebow, I guess.
I'm going to say it like this. I say this. I think he could bring change. I think he could change the morale to this team. I think he gets the crowd more involved because you know Philadelphia is probably the, and I'm giving them the, brutalist breed of fans that we've seen in sports. Everybody still goes back to the late 70s when they pelted Santa Claus with snowballs. So I think that this is a good setting for Tim Tebow, but he can't fall on his face. So this is where everything actually has to occur. But like we said previously, he has to make it through camp and actually be a part of the 53-man roster. It can't be a situation where he's dancing around in preseason and doesn't make the cut. So if he makes the cut is one thing, and I think by all means, by them making this signing right now, as long as he doesn't look horrible, he'll make the cut. I think he'll be a fan favorite. You could just imagine how many Tebow jerseys they're printing right now, Philadelphia style. And I still remember when Tebow came to the Jets. They were printing jerseys as soon as he made the deal happen out here in New York with the Jets. So I know that he'll be one of the fan favorites, especially if he's able to score touchdowns. Now, here is the interesting thing, though. If these defenses are, you know, ready to stop a quarterback that's 6'3", 251 pounds. I mean, he is a load at the end of the day. He's built solid. He knows when to take off and run, but it's a different ball game in the NFL, and I know this is something that Chip Kelly trying to bring a mobile offense college style to the NFL, and he's trying to get all of his ducks in a row, literally, with this Eagles team. But Tebow has a lot to prove. The one thing that I'm looking at most with Tebow is, one, while he went through the Veterans Combine and what he worked on, he better have worked on, you know, touch passes and making sure that he's completing passes, not him just wailing back with that long, you know, stroke of trying to throw the ball, so on and so forth, and just heaving the ball and not completing the pass and throwing ducks here and there. I'm worried about if he could throw the ball. Because if he could throw the ball, just like Taylor said, these defenses have to play honest and stay on these guys so he doesn't make a completion. Because if so, this opened up the running room not only for him, but also for DeMarco and also for Darren Sproles. So give or take, if he's completing these passes, he's getting 5 yards a clip running the ball, whether him or the two other options behind him, this is, I guess I get to draw somewhat of a similar comparison to it. This is similar to, now, I'm not saying it is, the DVD situation down in Atlanta when it was Duckett, Vic, and Dunn. Not to say to that situation, but Dunn would be Sproles, Vic would be Tebow, and Duckett would be more or less DeMarco Murray style. So this is how I look at that. I think Michael Vick was way more explosive once he took off than Tim Tebow. This is something that people are going to have to watch out for the Philadelphia Eagles team. That's how I feel about what this offense can present. Now, I'm not, and let me keep this clear. I agree with Nava to a certain extent. I do not think Tebow's the starter for all 16 games. If he beats out Brad, if everybody stays healthy, I'm not a big Matt Barkley fan. I don't like Matt Barkley at all. But if he could beat out Bradford, Barkley, and Sanchez for the job, I'm tipping my hat to Tim Tebow. If it gets done, I'm not going to say already. If it gets done.
I have to tell you, we are in agreement on a little bit, but I don't believe he beats out Bradford or Sanchez, because I believe draft day, Chip Kelly trades those away for whatever round picks and gets some players in the draft. That's why I think he's the starter. If that doesn't happen, obviously my prediction and my assumptions are totally out the window. Then he's got to go up against these other two guys. It's going to be tougher for him, obviously. To be outright those two guys, not saying they're the best in the game or whatever, but for him to go in there up against two other guys to try to, three-headed monster try to win, I don't think he's going to have, I just don't think he'll be able to pull that off. So that's why I think he'll be the starter week one through week 16, because I think he, being Chip Kelly, trades away those two quarterbacks for picks and then stacks up on some receivers and other players that they need.
I have a question. Why is it okay for the white quarterback who wants to run a read option to not have to become a pocket passer, but E.J. Manuel, Geno Smith, Robert Griffin, Colin Kaepernick, they don't have to become pocket passers? I'm curious as to why. Because all I hear in the media is how they all have to become pocket passers, but all I hear when they cover Tim Tebow is, well, they need to let him just be him. Why is that?
Chandler, I don't know, and I'm not one of those people that say that. I don't really think that neither of those quarterbacks need to be pocket passers. I think you need to change the word pocket with better. Just a better passer, a more accurate passer. That's it. I don't think they need to stay in the pocket, because out of the pocket is where they best, some of them is where they best, do their work. Not saying all of them, but some of them, those quarterbacks that you mentioned. But I really think that I don't know why the media does it. We can get into the race and all that stuff and how the black athlete is mistreated, especially the black quarterback. I just don't understand it, because I don't get it either. Why would they have to be better in the pocket? Can't they just be a better passer? I think that's what – I don't know if the pocket means a passer and that term, but I don't get it either. I don't know why they have to confine to the pocket. Andrew Luck and Aaron Rodgers aren't confined to the pocket at all. They're one of the best on the run outside of the pocket. And I think that if E.J. Manuel or Colin Kaepernick, any of them were, really good outside the pocket, Russell Wilson-esque outside the pocket, where they just make passes look so easy and pretty all the time, maybe they wouldn't get that, but I don't know. Really, Chandler, it's hard for me to say. And when it comes to Tebow and getting this second chance, I really do feel when it comes to the NFL, it is a race card, and it's sad for me to say that, because it's my sport. I love it. But I don't know what to say other than it's saddening that those quarterbacks have to be pocket passers. They can't just better their skill and become more accurate. I don't know what to say other than that, because it doesn't make any sense to me either.
Taylor, I think this is one of those heavy hitting topics, or the best piece of beef or chicken or whatever we throw it on the grill. This is very big, and this is something I wasn't ready for. And I'm actually glad that you threw this out there. Now, interesting enough, I am not a Philadelphia Eagle fan. I'm not a Philadelphia Eagle fan, but my people may laugh at what I'm about to say. They may laugh. My favorite quarterback of all time, I'm not going to lie, even though I do not like this team, I was a Randall Cunningham fan. I love what Randall could do. If Randall was in trouble, goodbye. We'll see you later. You got to catch this 7-yard striding dude downfield. And he could launch the ball, too. So that was the difference between Randall. I hate the way my team played him, because it was always something about Randall. He'll do something significant on the field. But I think a lot changed when they did try to keep him in the pocket. And defense has got to him because he wasn't taking off like he was normally used to. Then you fast forward the timetable, if you will, and it feels like I've been keeping my eyes on the Philadelphia Eagles. Then you fast forward to the years of 98, 99. Donovan McNabb comes out of Syracuse, i.e. I met him in Syracuse when I went to the football camp. But anyway, he comes from a run-option situation out there with Paul Pasqualoni. And knowing that he could run the ball like crazy, his first four games when he started for the Philadelphia Eagles, he was running the ball like crazy. He was a terror. They had him on the front of Sports Illustrated on Donovan McNabb taking over this, that, or third. The next season came around, and this is somebody else that Chandler doesn't like. Dan Marino gets into the ear of Donovan McNabb and told him he should become a pocket passer. And what does Donovan McNabb do? Try to become a pocket passer, where clearly they had a tough time dealing with him scrambling and being able to throw it and bringing everything that he had to the game. So it's interesting that you throw that out there. And I can't even sit away from it as much as possible. It's interesting that, you know, Chandler throw that out there, that African-American quarterbacks are forced to stay in the pocket while there are mobile Caucasian quarterbacks that they actually give them the green light to do what's necessary to win games. Where, let's be real, if I'm a coach or a GM or something like that, and to that nature, if you're a game changer, like let's say Michael Vick, they try their best not to corral Michael Vick, but I wouldn't worry about it. If he's going to pick up a first down and get out of bounds and not get in the harm's way or getting injured, do what you need to do. But it is interesting that, you know, you got RG3 that they're forcing to be a pocket passer. Kaepernick, they're forcing him to be a pocket passer right now. I mean, EJ Manuel as well, just like Chandler threw out there, too. It is a very interesting discussion.
Can I say not to, go ahead.
No, go ahead. We got to call him behind it, too. We got to call him behind it.
Okay, I was just going to say, I don't want to get, you know, political and race, so I'm going to go on the field. On the field, if you've got a quarterback who, since he's came in, all he does is run. And not say all he does is run, but what he does very well is run. And what he's done to kill teams, and in particular, say, Colin Kaepernick, who's ran for 231 yards in a playoff game, your offense or your defense would be geared to quarterback spy, to stay. You're not really going to rush that quarterback. Defensively, you're scared of blitzing that quarterback. So you're going to get a lot of four-man rushes on an offense. So if you've got a quarterback who, through most of his career, has made a living off of running with the ball, so defenses don't blitz you as much, they don't come after you as much because they're scared of that, and they're playing back, then what would be the best thing for you to do? Wouldn't it be become that pocket passer? So now all you have to do is read defenses because they're so scared of you from running. All you've got to do is be able to read a defense, which Colin Kaepernick can't do because I'm very sure he's trying to. He just can't. But if he could you imagine how great he would be as a quarterback? On the field,
he's done a great job against Green Bay. What, does he have a four-game winning streak against the Packers?
Yes, he does, running the ball. But I'm saying, could you imagine if he was a thrower, a passer as accurate as an Andrew Luck in the pocket? That's what I'm getting at. On the field, yeah, he's got a four-game winning streak against the Packers, but did any of them lead to a Super Bowl win? No.
No,
so,
he was a throwaway from winning a Super Bowl. But I remember Bolden, Anquan Bolden, with Kaepernick terrorizing you guys as well as Crabtree. Crabtree put a thorn in your side too. With Kaepernick
two receivers that can go up and get the ball wherever.
Don't sit there and act like he wasn't throwing the ball against that defense. He was torching y'all both ways up against that defense.
He was throwing the ball to receivers who can catch anything you throw at him. I mean, if you throw a ball wherever and they're going to catch it, come on now. You're talking about a quarterback who can't throw the ball, man. He can't read a defense because he beat my team. That makes him a great quarterback. I love that you're giving my team so much credit. I love it. If you can beat my team, you're a great quarterback.
Listen. Hold up. The Green Bay made the NFC Championship.
Yes.
Are they not Super Bowl relevant in any season?
Did we go to the Super Bowl? Did we win or did we go to the Super Bowl? Then no, we're not Super Bowl relevant. How is that hard to understand? We can go all the way up and have a lead till 59-58. We can have a lead. And if we lose it and don't go to the Super Bowl, we're not Super Bowl relevant. There's only two teams that were Super Bowl relevant.
That was Lucas stuff. Look, if that guy didn't kneel that interception in that NFC Championship game, he had a whole sideline to himself, Nacho. He nailed it because the game was in hand. I was up, 13 points right there? Like, at the end of the day, like I said, it is a discussion for Aaron Rodgers to be in the Super Bowl regardless because he's arguably one of the best quarterbacks in the league. You can put him and Brady. We got a couple of names that we can throw in there. But I guess we got this topic rolling already. I want to get the caller in. And see how they feel. They got to the cookout as they wish. Calling in from the Virginia area. Aaron, welcome to the cookout. How are you feeling this evening?
No, I'm sitting here scratching my head right now because, I don't understand your logic, D. I mean, just because Colin Kaepernick beat the Green Bay Packers, all of a sudden Colin Kaepernick's a decent quarterback, how could you not understand the logic? And then to make matters worse, okay, it sounds like to me, I've only been sitting here for 10 minutes, but it sounds like to me you're trying to use the Green Bay Packers as the barometer for all quarterbacks to measure. So just because he beat the Green Bay Packers, he's decent, or just because, you know what I'm saying, he put up the numbers against the Packers, Colin Kaepernick's a decent quarterback, I'm confused here. Explain that to me. By the way, Nacho, what's up, Chandler, what's up, whoever in the building, what's up? I'm sitting here about to rip my dang old car trying to listen to this nonsense because the logic is flawed, sir.
I barely can make out a ton of what you're saying, but from what I'm grasping, you're not giving Colin Kaepernick credit to be a good quarterback. He's not good?
No, I don't think he is. I don't think he ever was. He's a one-trick pony.
So all he does is scramble, and we know he can throw the ball. This is something that we alluded to earlier. I don't think that he was put in a situation where these guys could be successful. They try to put this offense around, let me say it the right way. Harbaugh situated the playbook to work best for him right now. Now it's going to be a situation if he can do it with Tom Sula right now, which I see clearly throws him under the water, but for every year that Kaepernick's been in the league, besides this season right here, he's been in postseason play. And he's gotten to the Super Bowl with his offense.
Okay, he's been a postseason play because of his defense in spite of him. Let me explain something to you, okay? All of a sudden, he knows the missing balls like the back of our hand, okay? How do we call it Kaepernick? Okay, you call a competition, make that man's favorite football. This man has proven to you time and time again. When you back up a coverage and make him flip balls in the tight windows, he can't do it. End of discussion. I don't know why I'm saying that they spent my God-given breath trying to talk about Colin effing Kaepernick. I don't understand that right now. I don't get it.
When they were winning their game, they were only scoring 14 or 17 points.
Answer my question.
I don't want to rattle off going back and forth with you. Let's talk this one out. Were they scored just 14 or 17 points, or were they beating people 27, 30? They were putting up 30 burgers on people at this given time. No?
Okay, so let me ask you a question, Ty. And relevant to that, how many times did the defense score?
Answer my question first before we go to your question.
Hold on a second, because in order to justify that logic, that would have to suggest that the San Francisco 49ers offense is responsible for all their plays. That would suggest that the San Francisco 49ers offense got the ball on the 20-yard line, 30-yard line, and made the field to get Kaepernick. We can't sit here and logically say that's the case because we all know, Ty, that that defense was turning the ball over. We all know that when the 49ers deep, when the 49ers offense was going to rush one, they would put the ball in 21's gut and let him run that rock. We all know that when the 49ers offense was scoring points or the 49ers offense was going good, it was on the legs of Colin Kaepernick and that read option, and not the arm of Colin Kaepernick. We all know that. So that logic right there, Ty, is flawed.
Okay, so what about the game? I think Anquan Boga had like two or three games of 200 yards receiving. That was just him running the ball?
I mean, a broken clock is right twice a day, Ty.
Wait, say that again because I can't make out what you're saying.
A broken clock is right twice a day. I mean,
come on, stop that, stop that. So he's not completing passes, he's just a broken clock being right two times. And stop it.
Let me ask you a question, okay?
Why don't you answer some of mine?
I'm asking you, young defensive coach, right? The night before the game, okay? You're looking at the game itself. How do you stop Colin Kaepernick?
I'm actually going to put seven in the box to keep him from running. Yes, you're right.
Okay, this is a moot point, then, fellas. This is a moot point.
Well, that's
okay, but listen, you're not answering my question. If they're putting 30 burgers on teams that are in the playoffs, yes, that's right, in the playoffs, then he's not a passer. He can't pass the ball, as you're telling me.
Dude, that's that line for those games. 9 times out of 10 were like 12 attempts. It is 12 completions for like 30 attempts, 120 some odd yards, a touchdown and a pick.
Hey, Ty.
Come on now, bro.
Yeah, we got a caller behind you too, Chandler. Yes, sir.
I could care less about your little discussion about Colin Kaepernick. The point is that Kaepernick can make a pass when he has to make a pass. That's why the team was successful. When they tried to turn him into strictly a pocket passer, they took away his greatest asset, which are his legs. And, yes, you know what? Steve Young won a Super Bowl, and he was a scrambling quarterback. You know what they should do? They would roll the pocket for him. So they weren't strictly running plays. This nonsense about, the guy's got to be a passing quarterback is just that nonsense. However, the quarterback wins you the game is all that matters. All that matters is that he makes the throws when he has to make some throws. And when you roll a pocket with Colin Kaepernick and he has to make a pass, he can make a pass. Period, end story. I don't care if he only had 12 attempts. If he's 10 of 12 for 190 yards, and he's made the passes he needed to make, and we won the game, I don't really care that he only threw the ball 12 times. Now, if you're the type of person that wants a guy to throw 25, 30 times, fine. That's your preference. That doesn't mean I can't win with a quarterback like Colin Kaepernick. So this nonsense that Kaepernick and he's Emmanuel, all these guys have to now become strictly pocket passers and stop running, is not applied to Tim Tebow, which is what we were talking about.
Right.
Okay? It's not applied to Johnny Manziel. Okay? It's all you hear for them is, they need to change the offense for them. All I hear about Kaepernick and everybody else is they have to change to fit a different offense. And my question is, why?
And, Chandler, I'm not saying, and I'm sorry that I can't answer that why, because I'm not a GM and I'm not an NFL owner. But what I'm saying is I'm not saying that Tebow can go in and do what he did in Denver, because he can't. I'm saying I think he has learned how to throw the ball, that I think he has learned how to do that over the course of the past couple years. Now, this could go on for hours, me and you saying he can and he can, because we don't know until we see it. But I'm not saying that he's okay to just run the ball and be Tim Tebow. He needs to throw the ball. He needs to make complete passes, and he needs to look good doing it to win games. I think he can now. I don't think this is the Tim Tebow of old. So this isn't me saying, and I know you're not putting it on me, but this isn't me saying that Tim Tebow can be old Tim Tebow and he doesn't have to change, because he does. He does need to be a pocket quarterback, and he does need to do that, along with these other quarterbacks like a Johnny Manziel. So I just don't believe that. I believe that it's a scheme, and this is me being, like I said, I can't get racial because I have to think that these guys want to win games, and it has to be on field. So my assumption and assuming would be, if you've got a quarterback who can run like crazy and they're not going to blitz him and they're going to keep seven in the box and they're going to make him read defenses, then why not make him a better pocket passer so he can just dissect teams? And then when they say, okay, let's blitz him now because he's dissecting us, then you use his legs again. That's what I'm saying. I can't answer your question because it's hard for me, not being a GM, to understand why they're saying they have to be pocket passers. I want him to be a better passer for the game so that their game can get better. Because if Colin Kaepernick can throw on the run or in the pocket like he could throw on the run, he's an instant better quarterback, and that's not a debate.
Yeah, you're right, and I'm not saying that about Tebow. What I'm saying though is they want to turn these guys into, and I'm talking about the media coverage, the media-driven, and what you hear from all these coaches, unnamed coaches, GMs, and scouts, okay? Mm-hmm. The narrative for guys like Kaepernick is they have to stop running and stay in the pocket. The narrative for the Manziels and the Tebows is you need to change the offense to utilize their capabilities, and their legs are their best capability. I say again, and I'm just using the names, but the bottom line is anybody with a tan to his skin that's a mobile quarterback, the narrative that is driven from the media and GMs and coaches is they need to stop running and stay in the pocket. If you are a Caucasian quarterback who can run, the narrative then from these same people is we must change the offense to utilize their best skill. And I'm trying to figure out what that's all about.
I think we know the answer to that question. I honestly think we know. You know, I don't like it, I don't agree with it, but I think we all sit here know the answer to that question.
Yeah, we do.
Okay, we do have a caller in queue calling in by way of the state of Georgia. We have Matt in the building. Matt, welcome to the cooker. How are you feeling this evening?
Well, I want whatever Siri's drinking because that guy gets hype.
Okay.
Wait,
great. To contribute to what you heard, I mean, any thoughts or opinions before
well,
we get
first
moving?
First off, being honest, Ty, I don't even know what happened to Kaepernick, what happened to him today, because I, forgive me, I haven't fallen on anything today.
Wait, you're breaking up. Could you repeat that, please?
I'm sorry. I said I have no idea what happened with Kaepernick. I'm not sure why y'all were talking about him. He used to be a reptilian freak until Jim Harbaugh ruined him.
But no, it was nothing about what happened with Kaepernick. We actually had a discussion about Tebow and him being with Philly, and the Kaepernick situation was brought up. Interesting situation. Let me keep it short and simple that me and Nacho said it would be interesting that Philadelphia win the NFC East, and I agree with him. And then Nacho actually went out there and said that Tebow will start all 16 games for the Eagles. And
Whoa!
I don't think it'll go that far. I think he can contribute to the situation, but he thinks that Tebow starting I'm trying to give you a briefing here. You say you don't know what's going on. I mean, do you want the full briefing or what?
Well, no, I just want to know what's Nacho drinking to be saying that. Tebow shouldn't play it down. Guy's terrible.
It's four. Matt, just so you know, I don't really drink, but it is 4:20 somewhere.
I got you. Wow, though, but Tim Tebow, come on now.
This is what I see. Knowing that Chip Kelly wants to speed the game up and he has decent running backs and Sproles is a speedster, and you got Murray who runs a legit 4.3, and the reason why I think Bradford might end up being started, depending on Bradford to remain healthy, that's the biggest cause to his situation, if he can stay on the field, because I don't think he's ever played a full 16-game season. And I'm actually putting a threat to him that go prove to me that you can play 16 games. That's because I think he's a pinpoint accurate type of quarterback, but he hasn't had the tools as of yet. He still doesn't have the big-time weapon, well, not the tools, but the weapons on the outside for him to, be a dynamic quarterback like he was coming out of college. But this is going to be tough. I really am leery about the situation of Tebow starting. Like I said, he has to make the 53-man roster first, and depending on what Kelly wants to go with, if he puts Tebow as a starter, if we're worried about Kaepernick and 7 or 8 men in the box, believe me, they'll be doing the same type of treatment to Tebow to make sure that he can prove that he can throw this ball downfield. This is what we've been debating since the start of the show.
Well, I wish Tebow the best, but I think he's better off at fullback.
And that's what's thankful to me, too. A lot of people think he could be a fullback. I don't know if he's ready to go head up with a linebacker at least 20 times a game.
I don't know if linebackers are ready to go up against him, Ty.
Here's the deal, you know what I'm saying? For a guy who is as Christian and as holy as he is, you know, his pride is going to be his undoing because he can really have a job in this league. Because the dude is passionate, the dude wants to win. He's a great locker room guy, but he refuses to allow his pride to allow him to change positions and to learn something new to keep him employed in the profession that he likes and the profession that he loves. So, you know, it's kind of an ironic, you know, situation for somebody, you know, who's God-fearing as Tim Tebow, you know, that his pride won't allow him to make a change so he can keep himself employed with the employer that he wants. That's kind of crazy when you start looking at it because I agree with Matt said, you know, he can be a decent fullback, you know, he can run down and, you know, cover kicks or do some other thing, you know, that, you know, keeps him employed, but he doesn't want to do that.
Right. Tebow wants the headlines. He always has. And, you know, he always did at Florida and he always did in Denver. Tebow's about, really.
Okay, Chandler.
You know,
go ahead, Nacho, then I'll go to Chandler. And
Go ahead to Chandler. I've spent a lot of time talking this afternoon. Go ahead to Chandler.
Well, Taylor, I want you to finish on that, you know, how you identified on the situation because, that, like I said, it was a big topic until it spilled over and went elsewhere of how they look at quarterbacks, i.e. to the, I guess, to the gesture of their skin tone on how they want the more mobile quarterbacks to stay in the pocket and the notable quarterback that can stay in the pocket that can they kind of give these guys the green light to do what they need to do to be successful.
Yeah, I just find it interesting, man. Like I said, that happens. And the fans just buy it. They just buy it. I mean, you already hear people saying that Robert Griffin is done. That he's done. You got they hired a coach who says, oh, he has to stay in the pocket. And you've heard this on every team. Oh, and by the way, don't discount the fact that the Seattle Mariners are loading up on wide receivers so that they can now, next season, talk about they're going to keep Russell Wilson in the pocket more. The Seattle Seahawks. You know who I meant. Keep in mind that what they load up, especially having Jimmy Graham there, and they're gonna bring in some more wide receivers, they are now changing that offense over into a pass-heavy offense. A pass-heavy offense doesn't fit what Russell Wilson does well, by the way. Russell Wilson.
That's why he's going to be a Ranger.
Yeah, and I think that's why Russell Wilson is still keeping his options open when it comes to baseball, if you've noticed the interviews he's doing, because he sees the way the winds are blowing. They are getting ready to tap him on the shoulder and say, you need to start running. You got to stay in the pocket.
And he's going to say, And he's going to say, you know what, fine, goodbye. And he's going to go take a big contract from the MLB because he's a great baseball player from all of the what I've heard and read about him. He can be a starter in the major league. So I believe if they come up to him with that BS, he's going to – and he's so strong-willed and he's so, I am me and that's who I am that – he'll say, okay, and you've been right. The interviews have been coming out, and they've been coming out strong about him and baseball. It's just him keeping his option open, playing on the offseason, doing all the things he does with baseball. So Russell Wilson will be the one that we see when they start, the media and that front office start saying, you've got to run the ball more, or you've got to be a pocket passer more, and you got to throw the ball down the field way more and stop running with the ball. He's going to say, all right, bye, because I got a backup plan. Not everyone does, not every quarterback does, but he does, and we're going to watch it happen. And it's going to be crazy to see it happen. But I think he can walk away from this game and be comfortable with what he's done as well. And I think that's another thing on his side. Being a Super Bowl winner, you can walk away feeling completed.
Yeah, and see what they're doing is they're ruining guys' careers. They're ruining people's careers with this. Yeah, I mean, let's be honest. Robert Griffin is at a crossroads in his career right now.
because he's on a team that wants him to stay in the pocket. It's not what he does well. And it takes time. It took Steve Young going to the USFL, okay, sitting on the bench in Tampa Bay, sitting behind Joe Montana before he was comfortable on a three-step, five-step, five-step, seven-step drop. You know how many years that was? And he still ran until he started having concussions. Donovan McNabb became an ordinary quarterback. Let's be honest. He became an average quarterback, a guy who threw a lot of interceptions. He threw a lot of touchdowns. He threw a lot of interceptions when he decided to just stay in the pocket. So why is and again, Ty, we can move on from this. Like I said, I just want people to recognize when they're seeing it about certain quarterbacks, recognize who they're saying it about and who they're not. That's all.
Okay,
Chandler,
fair,
you're
fair enough. The call number is 917-889-9592. I didn't think that that would be the first dish to crack and leave an hour worth of talk for City, but the Tebow, the mobile quarterback, the pocket passer, is pretty big. Chandler, is there a topic that you like to throw out on the grill before we get moving?
Actually, just one. Has anybody noticed that the New York Mets are in first place? I hate the Mets, by the way. But can we give them some love, especially in the National League East that was supposed to be dominated by Washington, who is struggling right now. In the National League East, where the Atlanta Braves were supposed to be bottom feeders, and the Atlanta Braves are doing well, you got the New York Mets in first place. Kerry Collins, I wasn't sure if he was a guy who could not turn out to be a giant douche all year and let these young kids play. But the Mets are doing a great job. Just the return of Matt Harvey has done so much to energize not only the fan base, but the players in that locker room. Don't be surprised if come Memorial Day, the New York Mets are still in first place.
Now, and this is how I look at it with the Mets. It is still April right now. And this is how they – not to this type of start, though. They haven't started off to this type of start in quite a while. But I just like you said around Memorial Day, I want to see them through the month of May and June to see if they can keep this hot streak up, because if they don't, then this is the normal situation on how people out there in Flushing and people in this area alone feel about this Mets team. But I'm pretty intrigued on the way that they started. Just like you said, Matt Harvey, the Connecticut kid, wink, wink, is actually 3-0 right now, doing well at his return after Tommy John surgery. Really don't get pitchers to come back and get on the bump and dominate as best as they can. The Braves are in their rear view, a game and a half back. I didn't think the Nationals would be off to this type of start. The interesting one is the Miami Marlins at this point, them being 3-10 right now. And just like I said, the one thing that I had a big gripe about was the money that they threw Stan, what was it, $300 million, that they ended up throwing him at the end of the day. And this is something that we discussed, especially me and Chandler, all of the media markets that are actually trying to feed into Miami. I mean, so what, unless this guy has blazing stats across the board, and he had a eye-gazing situation last year. But I want to see him keep this consistently running while he's down in Miami. But, again, just like Chandler threw out there, the Mets are off to an interesting start. One of the better records in the league across the board. At least, there's some teams that play in the Central that are actually tied or have a better record than the Mets. But it's interesting that the Mets are off to this type of start. And give people from the Metropolitans or the Metropolitan fans something to cheer about.
Hey, Ty.
I don't know if we have too many big-time baseball fans. Yes, Nacho.
I just want to ask Chandler a question. We got to baseball. I've been trying to catch Chandler on the baseball show to ask him this question. Can you explain to me why John Lester – over, I believe it was the past couple years in his first few starts, was undefeated with a sub-3.0 ERA, and now I believe he's 0-2 with a 5.96 ERA. Can you explain why?
Well, he's with the Cubs, and people
Stop
don't
it.
Realize how much pressure there is pitching for that organization as a guy who's tabbed now to take them to the World Series. Because this World Series is a bust for that team, believe it or not. It's World Series or bust. He took a huge contract. You say, oh, he played in Boston. He's used to the pressure. There are some teams in baseball that the pressure is different. It's just different. And Chicago is one of those teams. There's not that many, but it's a couple. The
St. Louis Cardinals, believe it or not, are one of those teams. The Yankees are one of those teams. But the Cubs are one of those teams. This franchise has been around since the 1900s. They haven't won a World Series in 100 years. They signed John Lester for a lot of money. They went out and got Joe Maddon. They're trading away young assets, and they still have young assets. The expectation is playoffs. And you can say John Lester may have been an ace in Boston, but he always had other veteran pitchers there with him. He had Beckett and Schilling and all of those guys. It wasn't ever just John Lester leading a pitching staff. And when it was just John Lester leading the pitching staff in Boston, how did that go for them? Not that well. And then they traded him to Oakland, where, again, he had other good pitchers on that staff with him. He is now in a situation where the hopes of an entire fan base are all on his shoulders. It's not shared amongst any other players. It's all on him. And I think he is trying to adjust to that. And I think he's struggling to adjust to the amount of pressure that's being put on him.
Okay. Thank you, Chandler. I've been asking that, and I really haven't, been able to catch you on the baseball show, so I just wanted to ask you that here. Thanks, man. It's the cookout. Wanted to throw you something.
All right, man. Thanks.
Serious, how about you? Do you have a topic that you like to throw on the grill here at the cookout?
I think Sirius is stunned. I think he's stunned because he's going to catch that first week loss to the Patriots.
Yeah, that's funny. I didn't know he's
there. Yeah, there he is.
I have my phone on mute. I'm always driving when I'm on these shows, so I always have my phone on mute. Honestly, I don't have anything to bring as far as a dish, but I did want to comment on the baseball topic and primarily the Nationals since I'm down here on the ground level with you, Bob. I won't sleep on them just yet, fellas. I mean, these guys are really starting to turn themselves around. They got off to the slow start, and again, we've alluded to that. Again, Matt Harvey's first pitch of the season, was against, the Nationals. So he went out there and did work. Shout out to the Mets for doing their thing. But, the Nationals opened up a set, this week against the St. Louis Cardinals, a big one here in the Metro. The bats are starting to wake up. The pitching staff is really starting to run in a form. And let's keep it 100. If he and Desmond ever really learned how to play baseball and stop committing so many errors, this Nationals team will be a decent ball club. So I think they'll come around, again, like everybody alluded to, wait till Memorial Day to see, how things shake out, both in the AL and the NL. But, nobody expected the Mets to come out, to this fast a start. So, shout out to them for doing their work. But as far as everything else concerned, man, I mean, if I wanted to throw a dish out there, I'm sure we'll talk about it later on in the show. I just want to get on these playoff basketball talk.
Well, we can discuss it. Definitely, I want you to throw that out there. Interesting thing about the Nationals, I wouldn't think they would be off to this type of start. They're under 500 with the pitching staff that we all, well, I'm not going to lie, I got caught up in the hype, too, with Scherzer going down there, and he was another added arm to the situation. They still got Gonzalez. They also have Zimmerman, too. I would think that they would be under 500, but anything can happen, man. You got to go out there and play the game. But they have an interesting situation right now up against St. Louis in the series. If they can actually take care of business up against the Cards, then it's something that I think that Washington could build off of right now. But they're not out of the water by any means. And like I said, I think the Cards could actually bring it to them tonight, too, while they are in D.C. tonight as well.
Well, I mean, here's the thing, I'm sure Chandler and somebody else want to pop in here as well. The pitching staff is not the problem. Let's keep in mind that, you got ace after ace after ace, These guys are doing jumps, I mean, Scherzer lost his home opener 2-1. Strasburg again, Gio, these guys are pitching jumps. I think they have the lowest ERA. In the major leagues right now, the Washington Nationals issue, and again, I know so much about it because I'm here, I'm watching it, as the defense behind them committing so many just boneheaded errors, and their bats haven't woke up yet, I mean, there's nobody that strikes out more right now than Bryce Harper, but the funny part is, you know, his on base percentage is like falling some change right now because they're now starting to figure out how to get on base. Jason Worth just came back last week, so him being added back into the starting lineup, you know what I'm saying? I know my man Chandler hates Ryan Zimmerman, but this dude is really starting to hit the ball and see the ball really well right now. So, I mean, the Washington Nationals are really starting to run into form. The pitching staff, I don't think it's going to ever be a problem because, again, I mean, when you start dealing with, you know, ace after ace after ace, you know, the way to get to the Nationals is to make them play defense behind them, and that's been working against them this so far this season.
Well, I wanted to ask you, though, Sirius, because I look at Strasburg, and I see a guy who has had Hall of Fame talent, and I don't see the same pitcher. And I wonder, in the metro area, do the fans talk about how they kind of mismanaged him, or are they putting it on Strasburg for not being the guy that, I mean, let's be honest, when before he got hurt and then rushed back from that injury, by the way, and then they shut him down over nonsense they did, flipping this kid around. This kid was all, I mean, he had Hall of Fame talent. And now he's like an afterthought in that rotation. When you talk about the rotation, he's like the fourth pitcher you mentioned. What's the feeling out there about that?
I think everybody's a little scared because he just came off the Tommy John surgery and everything. And, you know, you being a baseball aficionado and everybody else kind of understands the timetable and the lifeline for somebody, for a pitcher coming off that, you know, the shelf life is almost 2.5 years, you know. So they're coming up right on that since he came off. And he has kind of fallen out of good graces, you know, with the people out here in the metro. I mean, they don't want to move him. But, you know, when you have Gio throwing like he's been throwing, you know, and you have the pitchers that are around him that are throwing the ball better, and that's keeping 100. Strasburg's only pitched well in his own building. You know what I'm saying? You take Strasburg on the road, and his ERA spikes almost 2 to 3 months. So people down here in the metro are really bracing for, you know, his exit. I mean, keeping 100, so... coming off that Tommy John's, it's crazy for a pitcher. And, again, we all know that, you know, those of us who pay attention to the game or whatnot. So, but, you know, to back to your point, the dude has some filthy stuff. The dude was nasty, you know. And I'm not too sure if he was mismanaged. I'm not too sure what the reason is. But, you know, he's not the same guy. And that's why, again, you've seen him drop, you know, further down in the rotation. You know, you bring in Gio, you bring in, you know, the cat, you know, they brought in this offseason, and, you know, Strasburg seems to be an afterthought, and you're right, and I'm not too sure why. But everybody down here is pressing for him to get ready to leave because of that Tommy John surgery, and everybody out there knows the shelf life of that.
Before we get away from it, Taylor, do you think it's wise that they want to see a guy like Strasburg go, or you think it's fitting that he goes elsewhere?
I think the only way for his career to get back on track is for him to leave. I think it's done for him in Washington because he's still trying to be the guy he was, not the guy he is. They're pissed off that he's not the guy he was, and they really don't like the guy he is. And Sirius is right. He still hasn't learned to pitch. And I blame that on the previous regime, the previous coaching staff, because never taught him to pitch. They just sent him out there and said, throw fastballs. Never taught that young man to pitch. And that's why he can't pitch on the road. Yeah, that's a pitcher-friendly ballpark in Washington. You got to be able to pitch to any ballpark. You got to be able to throw breaking balls. You have to actually be able to pitch. Because you know what? 100 miles an hour can still get hit. Ask Randy Johnson. Randy Johnson was throwing 100 miles an hour in his early years in Seattle. He walked half the ballpark, and everybody else hit home runs off him. Then between the home runs and the walks, he struck everybody out, but he lost a lot of games. Okay, you have to be able to pitch. So I think for Strasburg to get his career back on track, and I hate to say it, as serious, you know the franchise I say that he's going to go to and become a star again, St. Louis.
Yeah. Yep.
You don't think the Yankees are looking at him?
I think Brian Cashman's a moron, so no. I think the perfect place for Strasburg is St. Louis. There's something about that Cardinals organization with guys that were star pitchers and ran into a little whatever. They go to St. Louis, and boom, they're Cy Young winners again.
Right behind Wainwright in the number 2 spot.
Yeah. Oh, God. Him and Wainwright. You kidding me?
Okay, so serious. I heard you throw out a topic that you want to talk about NBA playoff wise. Let's do it.
Well, gentlemen, I mean, honestly, we saw some games yesterday. My question is this: the Pelicans played a hell of a ball game. They really did. They played much better than they did game one. We had people here in the building that said that they were the Pelicans won the next four straight. I think that was Nacho Libre over there. What do you think about this whole Golden State, Pelican series? I mean, can Golden State sweep these bums, or can the Pelicans get the next two at home and force a game five or game six? I mean, are you impressed with, how the coaches, is coaching these guys? I mean, what did you guys feel on this 1-8 matchup?
Okay, well, let's throw this around the kitchen. I'll start with you first, Chandler. Your thoughts on this matchup? Now, like I said, game one, me and him were actually talking in the midst of this game. Game two, it got very interesting on how it was going back and forth. But, at the end of the day, Golden State still ended up prevailing. And oddly enough, this was partial of a topic that I had to talk about. Monty Williams started actually talking about the crowd noise and how it was illegal because of how loud it gets. And I started to laugh at it, but it's a true statement. On if he can't even bark out a call to his guys, they can't hear him across the floor. That's tough to do, but it's not like it should be illegal. I think that's the funny part about him making that statement. But here's the thing. I want to see if the Warriors can play this good on the road. They play good in the Oracle. Don't get me wrong. They get hype off of that crowd, so on and so forth. I want to see if they can do well on the road because I think they have a total of, 13 losses, if I'm not mistaken. They only lost two games at home. The last time that they lost at home was November up against the Spurs. So the Pelicans have their hands full to try and not only win their two games at home in game three and game four, but they also have to get back to the Oracle and win 1-2, where they're already questioning the crowd being a factor. So I do want to see how you guys feel about this, throwing this one around. It's interesting that series start there. Chandler, I'll start off with you. Your thoughts if the Pelicans could steal a game from the Warriors.
Well, I still believe in the Pelicans, but and I see a lot. But that home court advantage for the Warriors is something else. And Monty Williams, shut up. Seriously, stop talking, dude. Stop talking. Just shut up, all right? I saw you when you came in the league with the Knicks, all right? You ain't talked that much, Dennis. Don't start talking now. I like Monty Williams, by the way, but he needs to shut up. But, I mean, I'm very impressed with what the Pelicans are doing. And anyone who said that they thought the Pelicans would play this well, besides me and Nacho, you're a liar. I'm going to say it right now. You're a liar. Because he and I were the only ones even believing in the Pelicans. And I told you that they were going to give the Warriors more trouble than anybody thought they would. I still believe. I don't know if we have enough, but I'm on the edge of now hoping we can win instead of believing we can win, but I still believe, but I'm right there getting close to the hope portion of the program. I think they have to win game three. They have to. They have to win game three. If they win game three, then this is a series. And bench players play better at home in the playoffs. We all know that. So I expect the Pelican bench to put in some work when they get down there to Nollins. But game three, they have to win it, or then I'm reduced to hoping they win the series versus believing.
Nacho, your thoughts on this series? Do you think that they can actually have an impact to not only win game three but win game four and put the pressure back on the Warriors to go back home and win this series, or actually win game five? Your thoughts on this situation, and also with what Monty Williams said about the crowd noise being a factor, which is true. Which is true. The last five teams that had, the crowd noise being a factor like this, won championships, all five of them. So the Warriors have a crowd that could actually be an impact for them to win a championship, which is right in their arms. Your thoughts on this series as the 1-8 out west, with the Pelicans having to scrap, claw, and do whatever they can to win a game up against the Warriors?
I mean, it's crazy to say, but the only thing winning right now is the home court advantage. If you look at the starting five's numbers, in the past, yesterday's game in particular, they're almost a wash. It's the bench that comes out, and because of, like Chandler said, benches play better at home court. I think this is the only thing that's stopping the Pelicans from winning this series is going to be the home court advantage. I have totally hopped over to the hope. I really do hope they can win one in the Warriors' home and in Oracle. I do hope that. I believe they can win the next two in New Orleans. I do believe that Chandler hit the nail on the head. These bench players from New Orleans are going to get up. They're going to play. There's just something to say about New Orleans as a city and any team that almost plays in it. You just kind of playing for them, and it's sad that it's a tragedy, but since Katrina, playing for any team in New Orleans, especially in a playoff setting, you get really hyped. That crowd gets really behind you, and I really do believe that the Pelicans can win the next two. I don't put it past the Warriors to go in there and sweep them at this point. The Warriors are really good, as we've seen, but the Pelicans can do it. I think the Pelicans can in their home. The can and the hope word is being used a lot because I do can and hope they can. But it needs to be the bench players that show up for New Orleans, and then they need to show up again in the Oracle, hopefully carrying some of that momentum from New Orleans if they ever make it back.
Now, here's the interesting thing that I'm looking at. They've been able to keep it close in the middle of the Oracle and deal with the barrage of shooting that Steph or Clay has been able to go off to. But you know what I see that's interesting as an impact for the Pelicans in this series? Baby Jordan, Eric Gordon. The way that he's been playing and been able to score the ball free will, and he's actually been making Clay work. Clay's actually been looking like he's been getting tired, especially on the defensive end and trying to get shots up. Even though he's still a threat anytime he lets the ball go, he has not been shooting to the success rate like he did when he had that 26-point quarter in game one. And I can see it. He didn't have the same lift. He's missing those shots. And oddly enough, I want to see how you guys feel about this with Draymond Green saying that they think they wore Anthony Davis out in game two. So I think it can be a little too early for him to start throwing words out there, but if he's going to raise the Browns' brow, I think it's fitting to actually make a stir right here in game three. Siri, your thoughts on the situation since you threw it out there with the 1-8 matchup with the Pelicans trying to maintain the situation to win game three and four in New Orleans?
You know, man, I was very, like I said, when I brought the topic up, I was very impressed with the game plan and how the Pelicans played yesterday. I honestly believed, and I'm going to be, throwing my cards on the table, I thought that they were going to go ahead and get game two. I really did. You know, we saw a determined bunch, Anthony Davis, for all intents and purposes, could not be checked early on in that game. Eric Gordon was hitting from the parking lot, like you alluded to. Tyreke Evans, with him being back, in the lineup, was a problem, for defenders, what I'm saying? And let's keep it 100. So the first part of that game, the Golden State Warriors were not hitting any shots, I mean, there were so many times that they got right to the cup and, the ball wasn't falling and this, that, and the third, and I honestly sat there on my couch and was like, holy crap, this may be an upset. Nacho was right, Chandler may be on to something, this, that, and the third. But then again, they flipped the switch, the bench came in, like we all alluded to, and, they stretched that game out and it ended up winning by 10 points. If I'm a Pelicans fan, I really am not discouraged. I'm really not discouraged, though. They say, especially in basketball, a series doesn't really start until somebody wins on the opposing home floor. So all the Warriors did was take care of business at home. They have to go on the road where, again, we all have said it here today, that they're not as good on the road as they are at home. Now, granted, they're the best record team in the league, but let's keep it 100. Let's see what happens when they get down to the 30, for game three and see what happens. This board is going to be rambunctious. The Pelicans fans are going to be loud. They're going to be proud. They're going to try to invoke, some noise factor on Kerr and the Warriors. So we'll see what happens. Honestly, I believe that the Pelicans definitely get game three, putting the pressure back on the Golden State Warriors to play decent ball to try to get game four. I'm going to say this, gentlemen, you know, let the Pelicans mess up on the next two at home, and it's a wrap. It's a wrap. You don't want to give Anthony Davis a taste of success. You want to give that man a taste of that good in the playoffs because, again, my man Nacho said this when we was talking about it. I believe it was Sunday. He's a beast, man. You don't want to give that beast any type of blood. So I think if I'm a Golden State fan, you take care of business. You know, don't let Anthony Davis get that work. But such an initial point. I was impressed with the game plan. It just, you know, they ran into the better team and the better bench that night. But I like what I'm saying on the podcast right now.
Hey, Sirius. Hey, Steph, yes, tell me you better stay with me. That chicken curry down there in New Orleans, I'll tell you that. Boy, they're going to put some roots on it.
Yes, sir.
Okay, well, there are two matchups going on right now. One game is at the half. The Celtics are losing by 1 point to the Cleveland Cavaliers, keeping it close, and the Raptors are actually up 10 at the start of their game up against the Wizards. I think the Raptors are charged up and definitely trying not to let that crowd down, i.e. the crowd that Chandler's thrown some support to with them filling the arena up there in Air Canada as well as standing outside at an enormous rate. I really want to say at least 5,000 to 10,000 people around that whole arena cheering their faces off. So the Raptors have their hands full to win this game. If not, they go back to D.C. down 2. And I definitely don't think they want to see that type of deficit, especially while losing home court already. Any thoughts or opinions on either one of these games? I'll start with you first on this one, Nacho, whether the Boston-Cleveland matchup where Boston can actually try and steal a game, which I doubt, but they're close. They are close. And also the Wizards trying to fight their way back into this game with an early 10-point deficit, now 14-4.
I would have to say, let's just talk about the one that I predicted, the Celtics to steal one in the first game, but they didn't. So I think that they can do it in the second game. You know, I got to be right one or two times. So hopefully. No, I really do think being down 1 point, they taste it. Like I said, it was really close in the first game. They tasted an upset, and Cleveland was able to put them away. I do think Boston can steal one. Like I said, I don't believe they can win the series by any stretch of the means, but I do think if any team can steal one against Cleveland, it could be this Boston team with Isaiah Thomas. And as man, I just love Isaiah Thomas. I can't believe the Suns did what they did. But I really do believe that they can pull this upset out in the second half. You know, realistically, all they got to do is score 2 more points and they win the game. Hold Cleveland to 0, but, you know, it's just, you know, I wish everything was that simple in life. But, I do think that the Celtics, the way they're playing, they're giving everything to Cleveland. And I do think the rift with Kevin Love is something to be talked about, even though, you know, you can't see it, and his numbers are performing in the first game they were there, double-double, I believe. I think it was 19 and 12, if I'm mistaken. Somebody let me know. But, you know, it's just his numbers were there, but I do believe just everything that was going on before the playoff series and all the rifts that are going on now, I still think that if any trouble comes to light in the third quarter, and something happens and they start falling behind, I think Boston can smell blood and take control and steal one.
Wow. Okay. He still has faith in the Celtics to steal one in the queue. How about you, Sirius? Your thoughts on at least both of these games that are taking place, one at the half with the Cavs hanging on by one and the Wizards actually down 10 in Toronto?
You know, again, I'm going to go with the Wizards, you know, again, because I'm here on the ground floor. You will be a idiot to expect anything less right now. You know, I mean, this is a series, I mean, out of all 8 playoff series that we talked about, this is probably the one that we all picked to go, you know, 6-7 games. And we all understood that Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan had a horrible shooting night game one. We knew that they were not going to have that same horrible shooting night for game two. That's showing up in full form. Also with the Paul Pierce, you know, situation, we all understand the significance of that situation with the fines that were handed down by the commissioner's office. That's been the talk around here for the past 2.5, 3 days. You know, outside of what's going on hockey-wise and baseball-wise, and you start talking about the Wizards, you know, they everybody accepts that. So if the Raptors are able to hold serve and hold fort, they'll be tied 1-1 coming back to D.C., and I believe I won't be in the building for that game on Friday night, you know, close to my job, thank God. Just love doing what I do. But it's going to be crazy. It's going to be a crazy game. But, again, for all intents and purposes, I'm not shocked by that. I'm not reading too much into the Cleveland Cavaliers, Boston Celtics. It's halftime. You know, adjustments are made. I'm not even watching that particular game because, I'm on the road, so I really can't comment too much. I am listening to the other one on the radio here, so I know what's going on with that. But, adjustments are made. It's a one-point deficit. I expect the Cleveland Cavaliers to come out in the second half and pretty much put their foot on their throat. And, you know, I love Isaiah Thomas. Again, I'm with Nacho there. He's one hell of a player. It's just unfortunate that he's running into, you know, Mr. LeBron James and company round one. So it is what it is.
Okay, and Chandler, your thoughts on these two games taking place?
Well, Sirius hit it on the head with the Washington-Toronto series. I mean, that's seven games, and probably five of the games are going to be ugly, and we're going to be talking about, Jesus, can anybody shoot? You know what? Can Brad Stevens get some love, man? Tell me this dude can't coach. I dare anybody to tell me this dude can't coach. He's taking that team, and let's look at that team. Outside of a couple of players, Isaiah Thomas, Marcus Smart, maybe Jarrett Sullinger, is there anybody that you would take off of that team outside of maybe those three guys? Anybody? Is there anybody you would say, I want him on my team? And they are not only now they got in the playoffs. They are competing well against a team that is better than them. They're giving them all they can handle. I think Boston's going to get a game in this series or two. I think this series is going 5 or 6 games. I don't expect Boston to win. I'd like for them to win because I hate Cleveland. But I just think it shows you just how well and how good Boston is going to be because they're going to get a couple of stars. They're going to get one or two. And Boston is going to be really, really good for the next few years, and that really pisses me off. Danny Ainge has done a masterful job once again as a GM, another guy I can't stand. But Brad Stevens is coaching his behind off, man, and I think that's going to be a really good series. And I expect this game to be probably about a 3-point game at the end. One way or the other, I think it's going to be about a 3-point game.
Okay. I don't know. I think tonight might be a toss-up for me. I don't know who wins this game, either Boston or Cleveland. More than likely, I think Kyrie may warm up in the second half and, take the Celtics out. But who knows the way that Stevens has been able to get this Celtics team to play defense and not be in fear up against this Cavaliers team at the right time in the postseason makes this a very interesting matchup. And as we speak, the Wizards have actually closed that gap to 6. So this is going to be one heck of a game also in Toronto. The Raptors better buckle up because Paul Pierce should be coming pretty soon, and they've already awakened and old. That's right. In the NBA years, he's 37, so he's an old sleeping giant. We are at the tail end of the cookout, though, fellas. I want to plug and close out from every one of you, man. We had an epic show. Didn't really get to much, but that quarterback debate carried pretty heavy, and that's what we do in the cookout, man. And I'm pretty happy on the success of this show, but I'm going to get to each and every one of you as best as possible. Sirius just fell off with me going there. So with that being said, Nacho, I'll come to you next. Thank you for coming to the cookout. I need a plug, close out. Anything you'd like to promote here at the cookout?
Thank you. Thank you for making it official. If you read the letterhead or whatever you call it, the description of this episode, I was named, I was hashtagged. It's kind of special. It feels good, thank you again for that. Thank you for letting me come on this show and express the way I feel, my opinions, and getting into it with me. Thank you, Chandler. Serious. I wasn't joking. You're going to lose week one. And I know he's gone, so it's going to sound more like I'm Matt right now. I'm calling him out when he's gone. Hopefully you're playing a trick and he gets to hop back on. But on the other hand, the schedules were released. Packers at 49ers week 4. Packers at Raiders week 15. Two games I'm pretty excited about. You both know why. So those will be fun to watch, especially since the banter of how they beat us 4 times last time they played us, speaking of the Niners, and how Oakland handed us a loss last time we played when we didn't have Aaron Rodgers. So a couple of revenge games there. Other than that, this was a great show. I love the topics, Tebow. I'm standing by it. I think he helps them win the NFC East. And again, at Nacho in the Box on Twitter, follow me. And thank you guys. You have a great night.
But like I said, I'm real impartial. I don't think he's the starter from week 1 to week 17, but we'll see. We'll see. If he does win that job, I got to give this guy some kudos. So congratulations to at least pull out the first leg of this situation. Mr. Knight, I need a plug, close out, anything that you like to promote before we shut down the doors here at the cookout.
As always, a lot of fun. Serious, Matt, Nacho, you know, I had a lot of fun with y'all. We didn't get a chance to talk about it, but I told y'all the Milwaukee Bucks wasn't scared of the Bulls. We winning the games in Milwaukee. Just be clear on that. We're winning the games in Milwaukee. All right? We're winning those games. And the Yankees are beating the Tigers. The Rangers are up 2-1. Everybody have a good week.
Listen, I'm going to say this, Chandler, and I seen it last night. Jimmy Butler with the Thibodeau and said, Coach, they can't guard me. And he went ballistic on them. So if they can't figure out a way to stop Butler, and they still worried about number one, this could be a long, well, not even long, this could be a short series. For the Milwaukee Bucks. Hey, look, I ain't going to push him. We get to get this basketball this Thursday. I get some more of them at least until we can get this Thursday. So check us out, man, sportscitychefs.com. Check out the website, the interviews, the blogs, the chefs. I'll be back here Thursday, just like I said, Crossover Cafe, Master Chef Edition. We'll be full forward with that playoff talk. I already know how these people are coming to support. The numbers have been great. People continue to show the love. Check us out, iTunes. However you get to his blog talk, or if you're checking the posts that we got on each of the Sports City Chef pages or Twitter, however you've been getting involved, getting your food for thought, for all of y'all to be out there doing those dishes, Sports City thanks y'all. On that note, tell a friend to tell a friend that it's the chefs again, and if they don't know, now they know.
What a thought, I'd be caught in this life, let's celebrate with a toast and get lost in tonight and make it all light up. Wait until the sun goes down, we gon' make this bitch light up. Even when the sun goes down, I'ma make it go.
Ow, hoes turning heads like owls. I'm the man of the owl. Triple entendre, don't even ask me how. Con Edison flowing, connected to a high power. Y'all can miss me with the money talk. The smart money's on hold, fuck what the dummies talk. I don't do too much blogging. I just run the town, I don't do too much jogging. The summer's off, the winter too. Top down in the winter, that's what winners do. And to these niggas, I'm like Windows 7. You let them tell it, they swear, cause they invented you. And since no good deed go unpunished, I'm not as cool with niggas as I once was. I once was, cool as the funds was. Put these bright lights and turn me to a monster. Sorry, mama, I promise you wouldn't kill me, but I wouldn't win insane had I remained the same me. Fuck me. This is true. All I got is this money.
Who would have thought I'd be caught in this life? Let's celebrate with a toast and get lost in tonight and make it all light up.
They got me staring at the world through my rear view. Go ahead, baby, praise me, God. He can help you with your problems. Thug Brothers, why when we come through, they can relate to chef music, help them with their problems. Turn us up. What's your problem? Sports City, that's all I got. I'm gone.